Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you here on a getaway Friday morning. Friday, December 22nd, 2023, 14 and a half minutes past the hour. And this is our last broadcast day before the big Christmas holiday. So today is our last broadcast day before the big Christmas holiday. And we have got some great guests planned for you this morning. And opening up the program today is one of my favorite people. We haven't spoken to him in a long time, but I will tell you this, that, I was going through the newspapers this morning and going through the television news. And it's interesting because we have a pair of stories this morning that I think will be very interesting to talk about with this person. He is one of my favorite people, comes on the show periodically, and really straightens us out on some issues. You probably remember him best as a really, really solid White House correspondent or the host of the extremely popular news magazine Primetime Live, or maybe the Sunday morning program this week with Sam and Cokie. And of course, he was there with David Brinkley for all the years that show went on. What a pleasure it is in the holiday time. You want to visit with family members, and this person seems like family on this show, our good friend Sam Donaldson. Sam, how are you? Happy holidays.
Well, good morning, Scott. I'm okay. I'm still ticking. I'm 90, but well, all close to 90. I've fudged it a bit in a couple of months, and I can't complain. Although, you know, people say that I can't complain. Well, actually, we can all complain every day about this, that, or the other. But when you get to be 90, you have to conserve your energy. You can't use it complaining, or you can't get through the day.
You know, Sam, I've heard a lot of people who reached it to 90 who said, I never thought I'd get to 90. Tell us all what it's like.
Well, I never thought about it. Until recently, I thought I was a kid. Well, I knew better. I mean, I knew. They say, the scientists, that when you're 18, you're at your peak. Then physically, you begin to deteriorate. Well, I don't know. I made it through the 20s, the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, the 60s. And began to realize that I was slowing down mentally as well as physically into the 80s, and the 80s then began not a nosedive, but really a strong deterioration, maybe year by year. So I can't really tell you at what point Joe Biden or Donald J. Trump or anyone who is in the 70s or in the 80s, early 80s, really begins to lose it completely. You just have to take a look at that person, and you see what they say, how they say it, how they walk, how they talk. And in the case of presidents, you look at the decisions. Was this decision in this policy something I liked, something I thought was good for the country, or vice versa? And that ultimately, I think, is where the judgment falls.
Sam, that's an interesting point because, of course, age was a conversation with Ronald Reagan. When Bob Dole ran, age became a conversation again. When John McCain ran, age became a conversation again. And certainly it's a conversation now with our presumptive nominees for president. Does age matter, or is it person to person?
Well, you asked me how I, using my own experience, yes, age matters. Yes. Listen, your listeners get to decide when they hear our conversation whether I'm sharp, whether I know what I'm talking about from the standpoint of numbers or assertions, and then they can decide whether they agree with me or not. That's not the point. But age does matter, clearly. If it didn't, we would never elect anyone under 80, I suppose. The would probably agree with this, the more you learn, the more you understand. Well, I was wrong in my 50s. I know better now. I know how human nature works. I know how to uncover lies or a truth, whereas before I could be taken. So age would matter. And in this case, I'm not going to take sides here on the question of age for Biden or Trump, but I'm going to say people should make up their minds what are the criteria they're going to use. Somebody stumbles a little bit on the stair. Jerry Ford, when he was president, and was perhaps the most athletic individual from the standpoint of his football experience, his youth, hit his head on the helicopter door one day, happened to anyone. And then on another day, he sliced a ball playing with Arnold Palmer, I think, and it hit somebody. And so everyone said, well, that's stumble bum. No, Jerry Ford was not a stumble bum when it came to strength, when it came to ability. But we look at people that we don't live with and we don't see daily, and we look at these various signs. And, of course, in politics, the political enemy will, oh, my goodness, listen, this is terrible. And the political friend would say, well, it's nothing. And the public has to make up its mind.
Sam, when somebody gets to be 90, pretty far along in life, especially this time of year during the holiday season, people are looking for meaning. And that question has been out there for years and years and years. What's the meaning of life? When you get to be 90, do you figure it out? Well, what do you know?
No, I don't know. What's the meaning of life is maybe a fundamental question that people want to know, not only from the spiritual and perhaps from the standpoint of their religious beliefs, but from the standpoint of how do you make it through and be a good person, by your own definition. But I think we have a set of morals and ethics, certainly in this country, certainly most religions do, and in other countries. And you decide, well, what was the reason I was here? Well, biologically, you know why. I'm here for a purpose. You may have a religious belief in that, and that's fine. I don't quarrel with anyone's religion, unless their religion requires them to cut off my head because I'm an infidel. I oppose that. But in my case, I just really mean the old saying that we get too old soon and too late smart. Mistakes I've made in my youth when I was 30 or 40 or 50 or 60, I wouldn't make now. You say, because you don't have the capacity to make them, or you're not in a situation to make them. No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about just what people would call common sense built on experience. You can get it to education from books and from going to academies and all of this. And if you're smart enough, talking to your elders. But normally, when Santayana used the expression, those who do not remember the past are condemned to repeat it. Well, he was correct if you're talking about someone who has made mistakes in the past and don't remember how they made the mistakes, they're condemned to repeat them. But of course, young people coming in don't have that experience. So if they look at Vietnam or they look at any of our recent wars and they said, well, Lyndon Johnson didn't know how to do it, we would know how to do it. We could do it. We could do it in Iran today. We could. No, you can't, kids. No, you can't. You don't have the experience of having made the mistake. But you have a lot of smarts. And I can only hope that as you make your mistakes, you will file that information so that you don't make the same kind of mistake again.
One more question about this before we get to the news of the morning. But I heard legendary journalist Mike Wallace say one time when he was getting pretty close to 90, I think Morley Safer said to him, is there ever a time to reflect back on all the great stuff you did in your career? And Mike said, reflect? What am I going to reflect on? You know, I want to keep doing things. Sam, at this point, can you look back at the life you had, which has been, by all accounts, anybody would look at it, an extraordinary life. Can you reflect now and say, wow, I had a good life?
Oh, yes. Good life. Lucky life. There's an old expression also. It's better to be lucky than smart, if you had to make two comparisons. All the time that I was working in Washington, 52 years in the news business, with the first increasing responsibilities, increasing prominence from the standpoint of the people I was interacting with as politicians and covering, And then as I faded out in years, in stamina and ability, the kids took over, just as I had taken over from my elders at one point. People like to say, and I hear some people say things that I don't think is correct, which is, you know, I'd do it all over again, just the same way. Yeah, I made mistakes. I'd do it. No, you wouldn't. If you have any sense whatsoever, you wouldn't make the mistakes. But none of us has that kind of clairvoyance, no, ability to see the future without having had the experience. So in my case, I have no complaints. In fact, wow, as a country boy raised on a farm in southern New Mexico, born in 1934 in the middle of Depression, somehow was able to do the things, interact with people whose names are in the history book forever. Not Abraham Lincoln, no, or Franklin Roosevelt, but the people I knew and saw, not just in the United States, but met to some extent around the world. It was a dream that I would never have dreamed of, because in my generation, Scott, we didn't make 4-0s. At least most of us didn't. I made a gentleman's C in a land-grant college, small, in El Paso, Texas. I just bumbled around for a while after spending 2.5 years of the Army on active duty. No war. We had a president just didn't have the sense to get us into a war in the mid-50s, and so I didn't fight. But I went to Vietnam as a correspondent. And all of that was just a privilege. So, well, I'd do the life all over again and try to avoid the mistakes if possible.
Is there one mistake that stands out, Sam? Something you do, it just, I would do that differently.
There's some personal mistakes, perhaps, and I won't bore my audience with them. There are mistakes in reporting. Nothing, fortunately, that I can look back on and say, wow, did I just ruin someone's life by reporting a story wrong? Or did I cause people to do things who were watching ABC News that they wouldn't have done that harmed them because my reporting was bad? But from the standpoint of mistakes, any reporter who says they've never made a mistake is not telling the truth, or else they haven't been in the news business, I understood. Because the news business has always been, particularly today, instant. Now, we had the technology that didn't allow us to instantly show you pictures. I mean, Vietnam, when I was there, if we shot it on film, no videotape, and to process the film, you had to send it to Bangkok or Hong Kong. I mean, 2 days to get to New York, and now the cameras are right there. And the mistakes are right there that you can make because you don't have adequate information that surrounds the picture you see.
The world certainly has changed, without question. Interestingly, this morning, we have two stories that seem to be making headlines out of the political world, and it's kind of a bipartisan morning because one is about Joe Biden and one regarding Donald Trump. So let's start with the Biden story here. This is from NBC News this morning. Joe Biden exchanged emails with his son Hunter's business associate 54 times while he was serving as vice president, and some of the messages were sent around the time the elder Biden was traveling to Ukraine and his son was working for a Ukrainian gas company, according to records released by House Republicans. A White House spokesperson declined to comment, but pointed to statements by House Democrats that Hunter Biden's business associate, Eric Sherwin, worked as Joe Biden's financial advisor from 2009 to 2017 and helped him file his tax returns. Sherwin did not respond to request for comment. The records released describe the dates of the emails and who exchanged them, but do not include the messages themselves. NBC News has not reviewed the contents of the emails. Does it sound like there's anything here, Sam?
I don't know. I mean, I'm just kind of getting on to the story, and as you recite it there, and your listeners say, well, what are they talking about? What the emails? What payments? What's going on? I'll tell you this. We're going to have to wait to see the evidence as it appears in a forum correctly and properly and take a look at it, this latest story. So far, the Republicans in the House that insisted on voting to authorize an impeachment investigation have not come up with anything that substitutes. And I say that simply because the evidence has not been presented. It's not there. They keep saying, well, we got it. It's like saying in 2020, the election was stolen, and we have all these ballots that were wrong, and 60 out of 61 judges have said, well, you haven't presented any evidence. So they've authorized a committee to look for evidence. That's like saying, Scott, you know, sorry to say this, but we're going to indict you on felonious conduct. Now we're going to go look to see if we can find the felonious conduct. Well, that's not the way the American system works. I covered the impeachment investigation for Richard Nixon. And when the committee in the House, the Judiciary Committee, began studying the possibility that articles of impeachment were called for, they had a mountain of evidence, a mountain of witnesses under oath, a mountain of paper evidence, and ultimately the tapes, which doomed Richard Nixon from the standpoint of being able to continue as president. And you heard his own voice with his chief of staff cooking up an obstruction of justice. So if the Republicans have the evidence, if this latest information that NBC says it's not corroborated, but it's got hold of, proves to be something really offensive from the standpoint of wrongdoing, we'll know it. And if it proves to be, once again, a paper tiger, we'll know that too.
Sam, it's an odd story, even as I read it this morning, because you would think that the White House would want to release a statement if they knew what it was and they knew that nothing was there. But then you would also think that if there was something there, the House Republicans would have given it to NBC News so they could tell you what's there. Am I off base on that one?
Well, what we have at the moment, Scott, is a war of propaganda on both sides, but mainly by the Republicans beginning in 2020, who wanted to overturn what in every court that has heard a suit in every forum has not produced evidence that there was fraud. Biden won the election fair and square. All right. So what we're having now is let's take the economy. I hate to jump around. We come back to the subject, but it's the point I want to make. Hey, are we in a bad economy now? Well, all the statistics show it has been a remarkable year of recovery. No recession. Beginning of the year, all of the predictions were we're going to have a recession, have to have it. It's historic. That's what happens. No. Employment stays high. Consumer spending stays high. Stock market has come back appreciably. I mean, hey, have you been to the gas pump lately, folks? You're paying the same amount you paid 3 months ago? Oh, it's come down? Well, no, the economy is terrible. Donaldson, you're just a propagandist for the other side or something. Because what people are getting now, and it's similar now to the story you're talking about, is people telling you the economy is terrible. It's the worst we've ever had. Well, that's a lie. I'll take it back. Maybe the person really believes it's the worst we've ever had. But he's wrong. You judge things by your own evidence, of course. If a little cookie box that you like at the store has gone up 10 cents, you say, my God, the inflation's out of control. But again, I point to the gas. I point to all of the government statistics by the Bureau of Labor Statistics that, in a bipartisan sense, year after year, presidents here, presidents there, try to compile the figures accurately, points to an economy that's great, that looks like it may project it to next year even greater. I can go down the whole statistics, but you can look it up yourself. Go online. So back to this story, which I don't know anything about except you've told me something about it, and I saw a little something this morning, but can't quite figure it out. The Republicans, beginning with a man named Rudy Giuliani, you remember the name, he's quite prominent these days in the news, began to try to find some problem in Ukraine. The vice president, Mr. Biden, was one of the point men for the Obama administration in trying to handle, no war there yet, but handling problems there. They found, for instance, that he had advocated that the state prosecutor who tried to look into these things should be fired because he was not doing his job properly. Somehow the Republicans tried to tie that with the Hunter Biden, who was on the board of the gas company there. It turns out that almost all countries were pressuring Ukraine to fire this guy. He was not doing his job. And so the United States, in the form of our vice president, also said it. And so it turned out to be a paper tiger from the standpoint of wrongdoing, collaboration, etc. They have yet to produce evidence that would stand up in a court of law. And, of course, the House Representative Committee is not a court of law, but it's very important. And we'll wait to see it. Come on, Chairman Comer, produce it. It's like Giuliani the other day. Still, after the verdict of $148 million against him in a court of law by a jury of his peers in Georgia for the two ladies, the election roll poll worker that he defamed, after he kept saying it, yes, it's true. He did it again, and they sued him for another $148 million. He's filed for bankruptcy now. And his only statement to reporters when he said, the evidence is there. Well, where is it? You've never been able to present it. Stay tuned, he said. Stay tuned. No, I don't need to stay. Rudy, pardon the familiarity. I don't know you that well. I don't need to stay tuned. If you had any evidence to prove your case, you could have presented it in so many forums by now. To tell me to stay tuned is stupid.
I want to get to Giuliani because I find that a fascinating story. But the final bit of here on the Biden story this morning, and sitting in Jim Jordan's district, which tends to vote Republican, certainly, and looking, if I'm looking at this, if I'm a Republican voter, if I'm a Trump voter, if I am a Jordan voter, if I am a Republican-minded person, I think the spin is the media does not treat the Biden and Trump stories equally. They do not give them equal time. And even when there is a story that a legitimate news source, NBC News, produces that sounds bad on the surface for Biden, the media doesn't take it seriously or as seriously as if it was a Trump story. Any truth to that, Sam?
Well, in my experience, except for mistakes we've made, and I've already admitted that I made several of them in my career, the truth is we try to find information and present it, whether it's Republican, Democrat, whether it's this, that, or the other, fairly and accurately. And if we made a mistake, we try to correct that. Those were the days when I was a working reporter. Today, because so many people are thought to be reporters in that tradition, they have a website up. Alex Jones has a website up. He told you those kids were government plants in Stony Brook. They weren't killed. That was all a thing against gun control. Of course, he's paying the price now with awards for $1 billion against him. With all those sources out there, who to believe? And I just have to say to people, I don't know, but believe the people who can produce the evidence for what they say. Evidence that you can check. Don't take my word for it. The people who keep saying, stay tuned, or there was great fraud there. Of course, I've never been able to produce it in the court of law, but it was there. Take my word for it. Or this is the worst economy that we've ever had. Take my word for it. Don't take their word for it. Don't take their word for it. Check it out. Because if you won't check it out, if you're just going to blindly follow me, Scott, or so-and-so out there in the political world, you're part of the danger in this country. We need a citizenry that thinks and a citizenry that votes and vote your beliefs. But some base the votes not just on what someone says, but on what you, a smart guy, whether it was God or whether it was just nature that provided that mind of yours, use it. Use it or we'll lose it, meaning the country.
And we'll switch over to the other big story this morning, this out of the USA Today. Former President Donald Trump pressured election officials in Michigan to not certify the results of the 2020 presidential election, the Detroit News reported Thursday. Trump and Republican National Committee Chairwoman Rona McDaniel called two Republican members of the Wayne County Board of Canvassers, the body that certifies election results for Michigan's most populous county, home to Detroit, to urge them to not sign off on the results, according to a recording of the call reviewed by the Detroit News. "We've got to fight for our country," Trump reportedly told Monica Palmer and William Hartman on November 17, 2020. "We can't let these people take our country away from us." What do you make of this story, Sam?
Well, we have a little more information about this, but we're taking the Detroit News word. I haven't heard the tape. You haven't heard the tape. They said they got the tape, I think, from the January 6th committee, or they reviewed it. They don't. Maybe they've reviewed it. I'm not quite clear whether they have a possession of the tape or they simply were allowed to listen to it. But it appears to be what at the moment a valid tape of a call. Now, if President Trump had never made any other calls to people like that, we might immediately suspect it. But he called Georgia, he called Arizona. He, after the 2020 election, he called election officials, urging them to not certify the election, to throw it out, fake electors to be allowed. So it sort of fits the pattern, doesn't it? The reporter who says he reviewed the tape, along with others of the Detroit News, I heard on television yesterday, describe the tape and describe what he claims are the president's words then about they're trying to take our country away from it. Don't let them do it. Well, whose country is it? Well, it's ours, but that doesn't mean it's mine necessarily, as opposed to Jim Jordan's or yours or anyone else's. We all live here. We all have a right to participate if we are U.S. citizens in this country and to vote accordingly and to say, well, they're trying to take the country away from us. Who is us? Well, we know from President Trump, as he's repeated it twice now, the people who are not us are people who have been coming here to poison us, poison our blood. That is a Hitler phrase. I'm not calling Trump Hitler. I'm simply saying if you had a public relations person who cared about what language does to people, what language does in the way of guiding them and misguiding them and hurting them, he would say, don't use that phrase, because it's maybe you want to say people come to this country don't know our values and won't learn them, and that's bad. Same thing. But to poison the blood, he knows what he's doing. He is once again appealing to the base instincts of people who I think we would agree with their prejudices against Jews or against Muslims or against Mexicans or what have you, are not representing the best of us, and they're not representing something that will keep our democracy alive. So I can't judge the tape. I haven't heard it. And your listeners probably don't have access to it either. So we do know what the Detroit News says, to the extent that they wouldn't jeopardize with a story like this, their newspaper's ability to function, to be bought, to have advertisers. They probably think they do have the real McCoy.
Sam, something interesting in both of these stories this morning, the Biden story and the Trump story, that I think a lot of citizens read and think about. We have the current president and we have the former president. Now, both of these stories hinge on, well, communication. One email, one a phone call. Do these men not know, for better or worse, if there is anything there or not anything there, do they not know that phone calls are recorded and emails can be found?
Well, they know it now. I'm sure. I mean, I've known former President Trump for 35 years as a reporter, certainly in Washington. I didn't know him well like the reporters in New York. But I interviewed him once at great length about his failing businesses and all of that. So he's smart enough to know now, if he didn't depend, that when he's online in a telephone call, no matter how secure he thinks it is, it's not. Emails are not secure. The right to privacy, if it does exist, has been eroded in this country tremendously. There's not much anything you can do, or sometimes even hope that you can do, that's not going to be made public. So now, I'm certain in calls that the president makes, he makes some effort to acknowledge that he wants to say things that can be heard, if necessary, and not injure him. But he didn't after 2020. He made a whole bunch of phone calls to election officials attempting to pressure them. Georgia is one of the most famous, of course. Find me 11,000 votes, some odd. Just one more that I need to come over Biden's apparent victory there. Well, what's he doing? He's trying to overturn the election. But if you think what he's doing is the American way, I feel sorry for you.
We are heading into an election year. 2024 will be a presidential election year, and we have seen some Republican primaries that are fascinating for a lot of people. We have heard candidates chastised about their weight. We have heard people chastised about their ties. Nikki Haley, during one debate, a comment came her way that was, I'm going to paraphrase this, but it was pretty close to elect her and she will send your children to die on a primary stage. Are any of these candidates left on the Republican side other than Donald Trump? Do any of them have a chance?
I don't know. The answer today, as we speak, is no. All the evidence says no. Donald J. Trump will be the nominee of the Republican Party next year. But that's today. Now, aside from acts of the good Lord that come and go, as the Bible, the Christian Bible says, death comes like a thief in the night. Suddenly it's there. And I'm not believing Mr. Trump is going to die. I'm simply saying things can happen. It always does. And in the news business, anytime you think you've got the story cold, you turn around and there's a new piece of evidence one way or the other, and you realize you have to revise it. And there's a joke, if it's a joke, that says, if you want to hear God laugh, tell him you've made a plan. So I think at the moment it'll be Trump versus Biden. On the other side, there are a lot of people that believe Biden won't run again. And from the standpoint of one way or the other, the Democratic Party will put up someone else. I have no idea. There are names out there, but I have no idea who it might be. And, of course, that would be a different election. Trump would be Trump, but the new nominee would be different than the current president. I just think to forecast the result of this 2024 election, which I think is so important from the standpoint of the future of the country, one way or the other, at this point, with certainty, you'd have to be a Mississippi gambler. You'd have to outdo the Las Vegas odds. You'd have to have the kind of luck that comes along once in a lifetime. This can't be done.
Sam, one of the problems with both parties in this particular election, yes, Biden is being knocked about his age, and certainly Trump is being knocked about some indictments, which hold merit with a lot of people and don't hold a lot of merit with a lot of other people. Regardless of those two things, you have a person who's indicted and you have a person who would be the oldest president ever elected. But one of the problems with putting somebody else in their place, if that is what the parties or the people involved in America want to do, who's number two? Who leads these parties? Who are the people that can come out with less than a year to go and have that name recognition and be the Ted Kennedys or the John McCains or the Bob Doles that weren't presidential nominees at the time, but at least we knew who they were? Who are those people in both parties?
Well, in the case of the Republicans, Mr. Trump's shadow has been so large, the glow from his fierce attack and assault on the government as it exists, the way the country's run as it exists. And as he said, you know, don't let them take it away from us. Has been so large that it's dwarfed everyone. Yes, there's all the people that we see in these Republican debates, minus Donald J. Trump, and they really don't at this point seem to have a big chance. Although, as a reporter, I'll wait. This comes too often. What you see is around 70% of the country doesn't like either candidate from the standpoint of really loving it, really loving that person, really saying Franklin Roosevelt is going to be reelected, Ronald Reagan is going to get my vote, Barack. We're headed in the wrong direction. Never mind what I said about the economy. Never mind about things doing well. The stock market. People simply have this. And the question of whether they're basing it on facts as they see them or just their impression that someone gives them, I can't tell you. It's like what we're seeing in the Mideast and we're seeing in college campuses. Older Americans, according to the latest survey, still side with Israel in its fight against Hamas in Gaza. Younger Americans, up to 28 years of age, smart people apparently, on college campuses, and that's where the problem with college presidents has come, what is freedom of speech versus what you're against, you're for the Palestinians, and it gives us a problem. I mean, all of this is part of this election coming up and part of our country at the moment, and it's kind of new. Although Vietnam split us pretty badly, it's kind of new. And when you talk about the trivia from our politics today, little charges, you're overweight or something. We had a president weighed almost 300 pounds. You remember Taft? No, you don't. I don't either. Before my time, didn't cover him. We've had bald-headed presidents. Well, good luck today, guys, running with your bald head for the office. And when it comes to that overweight business, have you noticed all the commercials in the last several years? When I was growing up, when I was in my mid-50s, 60s, the commercials showed lithe young women. They showed very trim young men, athletes. Now, the commercials reflect America. Most of them have kind of people that 50 years ago were overweight. Now they're part of the general population. And advertisers are smart enough to say, hey, they spend money. I'm not going to show the young, brilliant, lithe young woman. I'm going to show the woman's got a dumpy, because that represents America. And that's smart. So the changes we've made, Scott, and you mentioned what's going to happen. The Supreme Court weighs in. Well, today at the UN, we're going to have a vote on a UN vote saying that Israel should pause, not ceasefire, should pause once again to let humanitarian aid into Gaza. And the United States this time will not veto this kind of objection. We're going to vote for it because the problem there with an estimated plus 20,000 Palestinians killed. Now, there were 1,200 Israelis killed in the October 7th assault. And I'm not in any way saying, oh, well, that doesn't matter. It matters tremendously. But trying to solve that problem is something that at the moment is, I think, burden number one.
In our final 10 minutes here, I want to touch on Israel and Palestine for a second, because I've been thinking a lot about this since this recent conflict broke out over there. Good friend of yours and a halfway decent friend of mine toward the end of her life, Dean of the White House Press Corps, Helen Thomas, lost her career over making comments about Israel and Palestine. And her feeling, for people who don't remember, was that the United States is very pro-Israel and has always been very pro-Israel, and if you're not pro-Israel, then you can't have an opinion in this country. And she, I believe it was President Barack Obama's first press conference, her question was, does Israel have a nuclear weapon? And President Obama didn't say no, but he wouldn't admit, I don't want to speculate on that, Helen. And the thought is, we pretty well know that they have a nuclear weapon, but no president would admit to it because we are pro-Israeli in this country. There has been a lot of anti-Semitism. We see the numbers on the rise. Is the United States in 2023 pro-Israel in our news and our feeling? Do the Palestinians not get a fair shake in America?
Well, if you're going to say pro or con, it's certainly pro-Israel from the standpoint of most older Americans. And we elderly people still are the largest percentage of the population. And Joe Biden, his popularity continues to slump in almost every way. And the handling of this Mideast fracas at the moment, most Americans, according to the polls, think he's wrong. And he is staunch Israeli. He is back Netanyahu. The problem ultimately is, fortunately, this will end at some point, and lives will not all be lost, is what do you do with the Palestinians? Well, I'm for a two-state solution. They should have a state of their own, and Israel should have a state of its own, because clearly what's happening now is Israel dominates 7 million people, the Palestinians, and will continue to do so forever. The Palestinians have to live under Israeli writ, under Israeli authority. The world, as you see at the moment, which is turning against what Israel is doing, the world is not going to say, well, that's fine. We think Ukrainians should be free of Russia, but that's fine. I think the Israelis should. What's happening is older Americans remember the Holocaust. I was 7 when we entered World War II, so I certainly don't remember it personally. And I didn't have people who died in it, I believe. I don't know, but I think not. But I learned about it, and it made an impression on me. And when Israel was called a state by the United States, 8 minutes after it declared itself a state, and Harry Truman said, yes, and we recognize you. We think that's a great thing for the Israelis to have, for Jewish people to have a homeland. We want them to do that. The kids, I'm not saying the kids are terrorists, but they don't have this background. They don't have this experience. The Holocaust they read about, and maybe unless their own families were involved, they know about it. But they see the Palestinians living under, as in an occupation. And they complain about that. And that's why I say on college campuses, and college presidents get in trouble by trying to split the hairs and look at both sides, to people with emotion whose families are involved. There are two sides. To the Israelis, we're going to get the Hamas, and they don't quite say it this way, but it's clear by their actions, no matter how many people we have to kill to get the Hamas people, and that's unfortunate. We don't mean to do it, we're going to do it. And there's this division now between Joe Biden and Prime Minister Netanyahu. Netanyahu has always opposed the two states. He's for the settlers. He's for the settlers who are illegally, according to Israel's own laws, settling the West Bank and preventing the idea that there's any land for a two states. But you would say, Biden is saying, and I'm not privy to his conversations to Netanyahu, think of the future. You, at the moment you have the power, and at the moment you have the bomb. But you cannot survive in a world if the whole world, which is growing exponentially in Africa, in Asia, in South America, you cannot not survive unless there is some peace made between the Palestinians and you. Now, if I were smart enough to tell you how to do it, I'm for the Oslo Accords and I'm for the two states. But they're probably very wise not to have me as my person who makes a decision.
Sam, there's something I want you to clear up, because this has been on my mind as well. We talk about anti-Semitism being up in the country, at least that's what all the polls say. And I do remember that I asked Helen when I interviewed her back when she lost her job because of her comments on Israel and Palestine. When I said, Helen, are you an anti-Semite, because that's what people are calling you, she said, I am a Semite, how can I be an anti-Semite, and basically alluded to the fact that in America, the word anti-Semite and anti-Semitism basically means anti-Israel, which is not what the word means. Was she correct when she said that?
Well, Anti-Semitism to me is something I don't understand. I understand its manifestations. I see it. We all see it. I'm not Jewish. I have so many Jewish friends, and I have a good friend Jew. No, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is, all right, the Jews killed Christ. Some Christians believe that's the reason they dislike them. Others say, well, the Jews have all the money. They don't have all the money. They don't control all the money either. And for my part, I don't quite understand why, as individuals, whether you're a Christian or a Jew or what have you, you can be a good or a bad individual. And if you're a bad individual by common rights and your own right, you don't like them. You're against them. But to ostracize or try to, as Hitler did, eliminate a race of people, a religion of people, I don't understand what in human nature requires that. It does not require it, and I don't understand it. So Helen is right from the standpoint, you can be opposition to Israeli policy and not an anti-Semite. You can be and hate Jews. And we are now turning. Joe Biden is now having to turn away from just absolutely lock, stock, and barrel, whatever you say, Israel, whatever you need to do, we'll support you 100. Not going to do it. Because the American public, clearly, is not moving in that direction, and certainly the world. And I said, don't make me the advisor. You can make me an advisor, but don't give me the power to create the solution. I would say to Prime Minister Netanyahu, what you're doing today, you feel you must do because of what happened on October 7th. And you got to understand that. I can't put myself in his shoes or Israeli's shoes. I can't. I didn't lose anyone on that day. The emotion of that must be so terrible. But think of the future. You'll get Hamas, and another Hamas will arise. You'll always have this problem. As long as there is not some place the Palestinians could call their own with safeguards, you can't just be the rulers forever.
Mm. Two quick questions before we part ways here. It always goes so fast with Sam, and we'll just leave Giuliani for another day, but this former mayor of New York...
Oh, he'll be around. He'll be broke, but he'll be around.
Churchill in a baseball cap now has had to declare bankruptcy for defamation. So that's for another day. But something more important here, three luminaries, certainly in the political world, Rosalynn Carter, former First Lady, Henry Kissinger, former Secretary of State, and Sandra Day O'Connor, first woman on the Supreme Court, have all passed away in the last 30 days, really. Sam, any memories of any of them that stick out in your mind?
O'Connor. She and I went to school together. I was in kindergarten at a school in El Paso called Radford School for Girls. I was the only little boy. They took little boys in kindergarten, and we have a picture together. She's no longer here, but we talked about it. I was a class where here I am, and there she is, and we didn't know each other. Later, we did. And so I'll just finish the story by saying she reminded me that that year, we had an assembly where people would come and talk at the school. And two of them were pretty famous. One was named Helen Keller, blind, deaf, and mute, with her caregiver, Ann Sullivan. I don't remember her at all. The other one was a woman, and my mother tried to impress on me. The woman was very important, because of her husband. Well, Justice O'Connor, when I talked to her about our experience together, said she went home to the ranch in Arizona and told her parents she had seen Helen Keller, and they were quite impressed. She said, I didn't dare tell them that I had seen Eleanor Roosevelt because they hated her husband. Well, go figure.
Wow.
I loved O'Connor. I thought she was a great swing justice. I wish we had her type on the court today. She said she made one big mistake, 2000. She was the swing vote that ended the count in Florida in Gore and Bush. And I was against Gore. I just thought it should end. I thought we should move forward. But I see now it shouldn't have ended. We should have had the final vote.
Mm. That is a tremendous story. Sam, before we part ways, because Christmas is just in a couple days, do you have a holiday message or feeling on what this holiday means for people out there listening?
No, I think it's a great holiday. Whether you celebrate Christmas is a Christian occasion, which of course it is to its origin, or whether you celebrate it as a time for giving, as a time for being with family, as a time for forgetting the problems of Ukraine and the Middle East, you know, the election coming up, all of that. And just, do I use a kind of a soft type phrase, and love one another. Love it. Love each other. That's what I wish for everybody.
Sam, you're one of my favorite people, and I'm so glad you could join us this morning on our last broadcast day before the big holiday. Merry Christmas to you and your family, and happy holidays, and thank you for everything, as always.
And to you and your listeners. Bye, Scott.
The legendary Sam Donaldson. All right, we're coming back in 15 minutes.
Pastor Steve and Scott Spears, and it's a great time where we just bounce ideas and thoughts back and forth on the day and different things going on. I invite you to join.